It's all yours.
Thank you, Jim. Good morning, guys. My name is Peter Fritz Updike. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm also a drug addict. And I mention that because it plays a part in my story. When I first started going to AA meetings, it was like, "Do not mention. We don't talk about that here." I can see that's been a little bit relaxed, so I feel more comfortable mentioning that. I also have on a ratty t-shirt, or not a ratty shirt, because it's my favorite shirt and my lucky shirt. So if you guys can deal with that, I appreciate it. Let me click this off. Okay. As I said, Fritz Upbeck, I'm an alcoholic. I have a couple home groups, I guess. We don't really have a roster, but I'm active in a couple home groups. I do service for them. I do have a sponsor who does have a sponsor. I know him. And I probably have at least 100, maybe 300 sponsee brothers. I don't know them, but they're good folks. One of my issues is that I'm not really sure I can bring much to you guys. I kind of see this as like the All-Star League of AA. A whole lot of sobriety, which I don't have. We'll get into that in a moment. But I've been reassured that, just open your mind, tell the truth, and that's what we're here for. We want to listen. One of my issues that's still bugging me, and I wasn't sure whether to bring this up or, but it's bugging me, is that alcohol played a role in my conception. Mom was a virgin, and dad evidently, I guess the term is date raped her. So I was conceived. This was late 50, 59, and my mother wasn't a big selling point back then. So mom did the right thing. She married my father. Again, from what I understand, against my father's wishes, he wasn't too big on getting married. But my grandfather laid down the law and dad did the right thing and got him married. Dad was what they call a character. And I always thought that was a neat thing. Yeah, he's a character. Well, I guess being a character often connotates negative things. So I have my father, I have my mother, I have a brother, a younger brother, who was into optical engineering, and he actually helped. Well, he was the guy that figured out what was wrong with the Hubble Space Telescope, and made a lot of money with his company by helping fix the Hubble Space Telescope. I have a sister, a younger sister, who married a multi-millionaire guy who turned out to be a special kind of guy. And I use the term special because you know that you're a special guy when your nickname at the local strip show was the Creep. He was a very different guy. My earliest alcohol that I remember, now I've been told that dad gave me beer in the bottle. I certainly don't remember that. But I do remember distinctly on a nice hot summer day, coming in and going in the refrigerator, and there was a pitcher of water. I grabbed that pitcher, threw back a couple chugs, and it was martinis. And oh God, that was horrible. That was very, very bad. I've been exposed to the issues of alcohol. I quote unquote discovered. I mean, Uncle Jim was a guest at our house, and I found Uncle Jim in DTs. Uncle Jim had fought in the Second World War. From what I understand, he was on the second landing boat at Omaha Beach. He came home with a Nazi flag, a couple Lugers, a whole lot of gold teeth, and more demons than any man should ever deal with. So Uncle Jim was a very, very bad alcoholic. And I discovered him, seeing fighting off demons and fighting off dragons and bats and things, and was like, Mom, Uncle Jim's not doing so well. There was also the time when, as a kid, I answered the front door, and I remember saying, Mom, there's some policemen at the door. It turned out they weren't policemen, they were MPs. And my father had a real good, he was a good friend of ours. And he was a lieutenant, and he was going to be promoted to general in the Air Force. He had flown in from Virginia to Buffalo to see my dad, and they were going to drive to DC. But they went on like a 3-day missing, dad was missing for 3 days with Uncle Robbie. And the MPs were there looking for him, and it caused some problems. Another kind of humorous episode was my mom got a call from the Canadian embassy, and my father had been, along with other people, had been arrested in the Toronto airport. They had flown on my uncle's private jet up to go fishing somewhere in Quebec. And on the way back, they stopped in Toronto, and they thought it'd be a good idea to hijack a baggage cart, which they were driving around the Toronto airport, blowing moose calls and duck calls, and the Toronto police didn't think that was so good. So he had been arrested, and mom had to deal with that. I went to we lived in Snyder. They moved to Snyder, New York. And dad was the kind of guy that every kid wanted. I mean, my dad was great. I just saw recently in the Buffalo Evening News that the Burbank Drive, where I lived, just had their 55th, I think, annual block party. My father had started that block party. Got the permits to block the road off, and it was a fun time. They had a little kind of like hot dog hamburger wagon, and of course they had kegs of beer, and they had birch beer for the kids. So he started that, but there was also a time when our next door neighbor, the Morelands, if you kicked the ball on Mr. Moreland's lawn, you waited for him to get it. You didn't want to walk on his lawn. And there was 1 year after the block party where my father was found sleeping in Mr. Moreland's bushes, which did not go over real well with pretty much anyone. I gotta say that Fritz Updike is kind of a difficult name to live up to. Well, let me put it this way. My name is Peter Fritz Updike. My dad's Peter. My grandfather is Fritz. And as for that whole conception thing, there were a whole lot of signs I should have seen that I missed. I remember my mom saying, I asked her how I got my name. And she said, your father wanted to name you actually Wolfgang. I think my dad had some Nazi fetish or something. She said, no, we're not naming him not Wolfgang. And he said, then we're gonna name him Fritz. And my mother said, I don't care, what we call him. We're naming him Peter. You're his father. So I was Peter Fritz Updike, which you can imagine, growing up, the name Fritz rhymes with a lot of weird other names. And Updike can be kind of distorted into other names. So it was kind of difficult. School was easy for me. I did very well in school. Don't know why, just I did well in school. I went to Smallwood Elementary, which was, from what I understand, where my parents wanted to live because it was supposedly the best elementary school in Western New York. I went to Amherst High School, and like all kids, we're trying to find a group. We're trying to find a community, so to speak. And that's a big thing in my life, community, find the right community. I was pretty good at athletes, but not the great, not the best. I was pretty smart, but not at the top of my class. So I joined the burnouts. They take anyone. And I remember the first time I had alcohol willingly. I think I was 16 years old, which is kind of late from what I understand. But and I remember saying, I'm not, I'll smoke marijuana because that's natural, but I'm not going to do any synthetic drugs, so to speak. I drank alcohol one day and I ate some paper LSD the next day. So I was right into it, man. I joined that team, with full mat, full colors. Up in now that happened my junior year. I was 16 years old. The very first time I had ever been not told I needed to help, but someone had mentioned to me that perhaps you ought to get some help, was I had a paper route. Now in Buffalo, they used to have two papers. They had the Buffalo Evening News. I had a paper route there, but they also had the Courier Express. And the owner of the Courier Express lived right across the street from us. One day I had a little wagon, and I had like four or five streets that I delivered papers on. One day I thought I'd carry a six pack with me at, in the morning. And evidently someone saw me drinking beer, probably, 5:45, 6:45, something like that. And they called the owner of the paper, and he kind of pulled me aside and said, it doesn't really look good for our company. Maybe you ought to think twice about that. I graduated from high school. I went to a 2-year school, Cobleskill, which is an ag and tech school, because I had won a scholarship. I didn't even apply for it, but that somehow someone put my name in for a scholarship for an agricultural and technical school, and I won the scholarship. So I went to Cobleskill, and I had no idea what I wanted to do. None. Which I don't think is odd for high school kids, but I can see now that my father was living vicariously through me, and he's always been interested in fly fishing and trout. He was like, yeah, why don't you take the fisheries biology class? And yeah, sure, I'll do that. So I enrolled in fisheries biology. One thing that I kind of skipped over was my father was really well respected, even though he was an alcoholic. He started the Amherst Hockey League, which went on to do some pretty good things. He coached a couple guys that went to the NHL, and while I didn't believe it, I've seen the plaque. He's number one on the Amherst Hockey Hall of Fame. Whatever that's for, because he actually started this league that did very well nationwide. Let's see, we mentioned that. Oh, so I'm at Cobleskill, and I'm taking a field I wasn't really sure that I wanted to, but it was fun. And I was living in a dorm and trying to be a character. I thought, well, I'll steal the school's flag, which I did. And I was using it as a bedspread. And of course, they didn't like that. So they searched the school and they found the flag. And sure enough, I was in trouble. Well, I thought if I'm already in trouble for it, I might as well take it again, which I did. They came to my room, they searched my room, they found this flag. It was all folded up. And I had to speak to the dean of the school. And he said, "Mr. Updike, I understand you're, still, I think it was still a teen, yeah, I was still a teenager." He said, "You're young, you made some mistakes, but you can't live on campus. And you need to move off campus. And I'm going to give you a little bit of advice. You can live anywhere you want, but do not move to Lark Street." Okay, well, of course, where did I go? Lark Street. Lark Street was the party street. The partying increased dramatically. And that's where I was really introduced to drugs. Next door neighbor came back. His dad had died of cancer. He had all this cancer pain medicine. I bought it all, loved it. Well, no, I more than kind of. I got involved in cocaine. And a guy I knew came, had 300 pounds of peyote shipped to him in these foot lockers. So my second year of Coble School wasn't. I wasn't really in my right mind. It was peyote jello, peyote milkshakes, peyote raw. And I did okay. But as I was going to my final exams, I was struck down with, I thought someone had buried a hatchet in my head. And I was right outside the clinic. I walked into the clinic suffering and they weren't sure what was going on. Ran all sorts of tests. They thought I had mono, but I had previously had mono. Turns out I had hepatitis from drinking. So I missed my finals. I didn't graduate from Coble School. And I knew that I was, had some issues. I had some serious problems. I wasn't ready to go from Coble School to another school. So I moved to Boone, North Carolina. Actually, I was kicked out of my house. My father said he found a Heineken cap in his car. You're not setting a good example for your brothers and sisters. We're asking you to leave. We're telling you to leave, but we have a place for you to go, and that's with your cousin Tom. My cousin Tom was a saint. Lived in the mountains of North Carolina, Boone, North Carolina. And I moved down there. Got a job at this, what I thought that was a wonderful little Mexican kind of cantina. It was populated by moonshiners, weed growers, rednecks, and hippies, and they all got along great. And it was a very good time. Of course, my drug use was increasing. My alcohol use was off the charts. At the time, I had a 1967 Ford Mustang, which I drove off the Blue Ridge Parkway. And that was a big thing because when I got out of the car, it was hung up in a tree and I probably fell 50 feet. So that was my first real car accident. I think we all can remember, us older folks can remember when DWI wasn't really. I mean, it was a thing. But if you got stopped with the right cop, they would kind of, how far are you from home? Can I drive you home, et cetera? And I can remember distinctly being stopped by a guy. He said, "You've been drinking?" I said, "No." He said, "Would you step out of the car?" And I stepped out and six Michelob bottles fell out of the car. So all this time I'm thinking, this really isn't working out well for me. But I was ignorant of, actually, I was ignorant of what I could do about it. I went to West Virginia University, which at the time, the year before, had been rated by Playboy magazine as the number one party school in America. If you were a student, you got into this football games for free. And their policy was you can bring anything into the stadium so long as you take it out. So my friends would bring in, a wagon with a big plastic garbage can with a keg in it. Obviously, so the alcohol use just started to skyrocket. If I was interested in the class, I would do very well. If I wasn't, I'd fail. I remember there was 2 semesters. I was suspended for 1 semester because of a point something's grade average. And the next semester, I was on the president's dinner list, for a 4.0. So I could do well, but I could also really screw it up. Let me just go over these. Oh, and at the time in West Virginia, I've got some friends and living with some people. And of course, the alcohol and the drugs were crazy. But my friends started to say, Fritz, you kind of take this a little too much. You kind of you're kind of over the edge. So why don't you really kind of tone it down? Well, good advice is not always followed in my mind. I had met a girl while I was in Boone, North Carolina. We had this kind of on again off. Well, we had an on again relationship when I was there. When I moved to West Virginia, it was kind of off again. I did graduate from West Virginia. I had picked up my first arrest. I was writing prescriptions. I thought it was the easiest thing. I separated my shoulder. Remember the doctor writing a prescription for narcotics, handing it to me and leaving the pad there. And I thought, well, that's pretty simple. So I ripped off a few pads and I was forging prescriptions. Was arrested. A huge deal. I was a Yankee in West Virginia. I knew I was going to be arrested. But I'd call my parents. They had made arrangements for me to post $5,000 bail and be released. The police found me first, and I had $50,000 bail, which obviously was a problem. And then one day they said, "Updike, pack your shit, you're out of here." And I said, "No, there's got to be a mistake." They said, "No, pack your shit, you're out of here." And it turned out that not even a friend, an acquaintance who we used to buy codeine for in West Virginia, you can buy codeine by signing your name. We used to buy codeine for him for had put up his house to get me out of jail. And like I said, he was simply an acquaintance. I was amazed. And I said, "Ed, what do I need to do to pay you back?" And he said, "You need to go to a meeting with me." "I can do that." I said, "How about I bring a bottle of champagne? And then we'll go." He said, No, you know, it's not about drugs. It's about drugs and it's about alcohol. We just can't do any of it." I went to this meeting. I saw the doctor who would perform surgery on me, saw lawyers. Thought, well, this is nice, but it's really not for me. It was an AA meeting. And at the time, and up until fairly recently, I was convinced that drugs were my issue, not alcohol. I didn't come into AA to stop drinking. I came in to stop doing drugs. And it seemed to help. It seemed to help quite a bit. I mentioned this girl that I had met, and she called me up and said, "Hey, listen, I can get you a job here in Greensboro," and it was with the Boy Scouts. What was that? What would I be doing? "Well, you'd be running a nature center." "Oh, great! That's right up my alley." So I moved to Greensboro, not knowing that her ex-boyfriend was a kind of a major cocaine importer. So there was a lot of cocaine. I was working for the Boy Scouts and evidently did a great job. They said, "How would you like to work for us full time?" This was a summer gig. They said, "How would you like to work for us full time?" I was, "Yeah, sure, I'll think about it." And so I interviewed in Greensboro, I interviewed in High Point, I interviewed in Annapolis, Maryland, and they said, "We'd like to fly to Kansas City for, the big interview, the national interview." Sure. So I bought a new suit, cut my hair, got some new shoes, drove to the airport, was kind of nervous, stopped in the bar, had a drink, had two drinks, had many drinks, and I never got on the plane. Just never got on. Obviously that job didn't work out. So I returned to Rome, New York, where my parents were now living. I was born in Rome. I moved here to Buffalo when I was three. My parents moved back to Rome. So I moved back to Rome. And continued with the drugs, continued with the alcohol. But I started to go to meetings. I'd gone to a rehab and they had taken me to a meeting. And there was a guy that was celebrating his 5-year anniversary, and I was just dumbfounded. I mean, 5 years, that's unbelievable. And I said something to him afterwards. And he said, "Well, what would you like to get out of this?" And I said, I'd love to be sober for 5 years. He said, "Well, if I could wave a magic wand and put you 5 years in the future with 5 years of sobriety, but you would miss all the joys and all the happiness and all the hardships and, the tough times, but you'd miss those 5 years. Would you take it?" And I said no. And then he went on to explain this is a one day at a time thing. Okay. So more knowledge is coming into me. I met a girl in this rehab, just kind of smitten with her. We kept in touch. I went down to see her, and her parents were just the most wonderful people. Her parents were, I actually enjoyed seeing her more than I saw her parents. He said, "Fritz, don't you have a degree in fisheries biology?" I said, "Yeah, I do." He said, "Well, the school right up the hill, the fisheries biology teacher just quit, a month before school starts. How would you like to interview for that job?" "Sure." I got my hair cut on a Wednesday. I think I bought some clothes on a Thursday. Probably polished up on a Friday, or had an interview on a Friday and got the job. So I was a professor at a state school, and I loved it. It was good. Unfortunately, the drinking still was continuing, and I kind of had a couple run-ins with the school security. At the end of the year, they came. We had like the fa faculty get together, and they said, "Now, Fritz, what are you going to be doing next year?" And I was kind of surprised that I wasn't coming back. Said, "Well, I don't know." And the reason they gave me was because I didn't have an advanced degree. I just had my bachelor's degree. I talked to a lawyer and he said, "You really need some more education." So I went to Syracuse grad school, living in Rome, driving to Syracuse. And the education grad school, there's primary education, there's elementary education. I was in science, secondary science education. And I remember that we had, there's something called the National Teacher's Exam that everyone has to take to get their teacher's license. And I had a study group. And I remember one day, now the NTE, National Teacher's Exam, is like a 4 or 5 day exam. And one day we were having a pre-study group before the exam started at noon. I said, "Hey, you guys want to go get lunch?" "Sure. Who wants a pitcher?" And they looked at me like I just said, "Anyone want syphilis?" They just couldn't believe that I was going to drink beer. Well, I did. The exam went well. And the professor was going to read who did well on the exam. Well, how everyone did. Now, with the name Updike, I come last. So he runs through everyone. You did real good. We're a little disappointed in this, that. Because he says, Mr. Updike, whew. And I could see all these heads turn to me like, oh, here we go. And he said, we're not really sure how you got the questions in advance, but you did remarkable. You scored in the top 1% of across the board. And so then I'm thinking, well, of course I can drink. Everything's good. I can do this. Well, I couldn't. Obviously things I can see my time is getting short here. Things got worse. Things got much worse. I went to prison. Prison is a whole different animal. Came out and was just tired of this life. So I was living in, I'd moved back to my parents now had moved to Buffalo. I started a NA group in Buffalo with the idea of stopping drugs. Stayed clean of drugs for 5 years, but I was still drinking. In hindsight, I can see that I had a sponsor by name only. I'd call them, but we never did any step work. We never did, never did the steps. And most importantly was a lack of prayer and meditation. That never crossed my mind. Yeah, I could see it was in the steps, but 10 out of 12 is all right. So that's what I was doing. I had been diagnosed with cancer, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And I was one of those. Have you ever been exposed to Roundup and been diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma? Well, sure. Yeah, I was. So I filed a claim, and sure enough, I had a very, very, very generous settlement, probably mid six figures. So I'm in the Oxford house. I'm in an Oxford house, and I've got this money. A gentleman that most of us know from Buffalo, who's also in the program, said, "Hey, listen, after a time in Oxford, I said, hey, I've got this house. I'd like you to live, with me. You're the only guy here that I could live with." So I moved with him to North Buffalo. Had a whole lot of money. Also discovered the dark web. Dark web is just a horrible place, folks. I mean, you can buy children, you can buy guns, you can buy any drug you want. And I put this poor guy through hell. He finally said, Fritz, you got to move out. I moved out. I was going to meetings. And finally, a friend at the meet at my home group then said, Fritz, are you working with anyone? I said, no, not really. They said, well, you look like you're dying. We say that often, but when someone that's not really a close friend and he's not joking says, you look like you're dying, it's kind of a serious thing. I asked around for sponsors. I was told I had this one. I had a sponsor. We read the book, and that was it. He said, now I got a new employee. Go on out. That didn't work. I asked another gentleman if he'd be my sponsor that I had been fired by my previous one. He said, what'd you get fired for? I said, I tried to buy a gun. He said, I don't think this is going to work. Why don't you ask so-and-so? He just retired. I know he'd help you, which I did. That changed my life. The sponsor, the most kind, considerate, patient, understanding, most of all, good listener, took me, I won't say under his wing, but was willing all the time to help. So we started to talk about the steps. And I recognized that the one thing that was missing was prayer and meditation. Don't know how to pray. Mentioned it to him, don't know how to pray. And he said, well, just try starting off by starting your day saying, thank you, God. Say it 100 times. I didn't do it 100 times. How are we doing on time? But I did it. And then it went to, start your day by just saying, good morning, God, which I did. Good morning, God. Thank you for a good night's sleep. Help me get through today. And I put together some time. I put together a year plus. I went to my sister was flying me down every year to cat sit her cat. So it was January of 2023. I had some time under my belt. I flew down there. My brother had flown in from Colorado, and I had a couple of Bloody Marys. I didn't get even tipsy, but I drank. And that's why I say I'm really not sure on my sober date. I think it was January 21st. I just call it the end of January. So coming up next month will be another year. The important thing, what happened was I found a sponsor that I trust, I know won't lie to me. And it has done wonders for me and my self-esteem and for my alcohol. What it's like now, I think I'm finally at peace, or I'm getting at peace with myself. I still have a lot of issues that bother me. But my sponsor is always there to listen to them. The biggest thing that I can attribute to AA. Now, both my parents have died. They're pretty gruesome, four types of cancer and Parkinson's, so that was really tough. So I have my brother and sister left, and my sister has always been the one that was critical of me. Fritz, can't you see what you're doing to the family? Fritz, can't you see what you're doing for to mom and dad? You're a better guy than this. Why are you doing this? Why are you so set on self-destruction? And it was kind of tough hearing from her. That relationship has been renewed, regenerated, and renewed. Just recently, I sent her a pair of pants. She's a seamstress. She has a little side gig. She makes little hats and dop bags and things. I sent her a pair of pants that I had blown the ass out of, and she fixed them and sent them back. And there was a note to me on the with the pants, and it was on a pad of paper that obviously she had gone out and bought, because it wasn't just a handwritten note, but it was a pre-printed pad. And on it said, I think it's about time I start loving you again. And man, I read that and just tears, welled up in my eyes. That to me is one of the greatest gifts that this program has given me. Other gifts that this program has given me is, I mentioned community. Community is important to me. I have a community of friends. You're all friends. I may not know you all, but you're all friends. I trust you all. I feel comfortable with you all. I would never say this to anyone, I'd ask, when Jim asked if it was okay to record it, I almost said, yeah, as long as you don't play in court. You folks are my community. And again, I can't thank you enough. I can't thank you enough for walking with me I like to use analogies, and for a while it was like, man, I was standing in the weeds and I had no idea where to go. And finally, you folks took a little broom or a little rake and just kind of and said, well, there's the road right there. There's the path. Why don't you step out of the weeds and get on the path? And I feel like I have. Like I mentioned, I'm active in a couple of home groups. I have spoken at some rehabs, but the most important thing is I'm not drinking, and I'm not using drugs. Some days it's difficult. Some days, as my sponsor says, alcohol talks to me and says, these guys don't deal with you. These guys don't want to hear from you. You're not worth, you're not worth enough, et cetera. And I know that's bullshit. I now know it's bullshit. It used to just send me into a spiral. Now I know it's bullshit. I know it's a higher power than me, but it's a lower power than my higher power that's telling me these things, sending me these messages, just hoping I'm gonna fall back into despair and self-destruction. So I kind of put my notes aside. I guess we're kind of close, but what I would like to just end this with is saying I'm an alcoholic and I'm among friends, and I'd like to thank each and every one of you for one kind of raking that weeds aside and saying, hey, dude, th there's the path. Show me where the path is, and walking me with me on this path, sometimes holding my hand. But I'm very glad to be here. I'm honored to have spoken to you folks, and I hope I made some sense. So, thanks.